Welcome to the Building Stories podcast series. My name is Amy Barnes, and I'll be your host as we explore some of Ontario's built heritage. This series will include 15 podcasts in total, so if you enjoyed today's show, be sure to check out some of the others. Each podcast is going to explore a different topic related to heritage conservation in different regions of Ontario. The podcast will include a brief history of the building, interviews with people who have some connection to this space, but the ultimate goal is to try and tell stories about the buildings, stories about the space that most people don't know. Each one is going to be different, because the truth is, each building has a different past, and each building has a different story to tell us. So without further ado, let's get started on today's topic. Today we head to the city of Cambridge in southwestern Ontario. The city of Cambridge was formally established in 1973 when the city of Galt, the town of Preston, the town of Hespler, and the village of Blair were all amalgamated. Now, each of these areas has its own specific history. However, we're going to focus in on the village of Blair because that is where our topic is taking us today. The land that makes up Blair was acquired from the Six Nations through a land speculator named Richard Beasley. It was then sold to Samuel Betzner in the early 1800s. Mr. Betzner would sell a portion of his land in 1817 to the Bowman family. Now, it is the Bowmans and the Bechtel family who are credited with initiating the development of Blair. A big part of this development was the creation of a mill, so when more power was needed for the mill, the structure we are going to talk about today was built. The Sheave Tower, built in 1876 by Alan Bowman. The tower is 31 feet high and has a 12-foot square base. Now, for those who are unfamiliar with the mechanics of how this type of tower works, I will read an excerpt from the City of Cambridge website that explains it much better than I can. Inside was a water-powered turbine that turned a vertical shaft that ran from the turbine to a horizontal shaft mounted at the top of the tower. The horizontal shaft extended through the east wall where it was attached to an 8-foot diameter cast iron wheel. The wheel was designed to permit installation of hardwood blocks around the rim. The blocks had deep grooves or sheaves cuts in them through which ran a wire cable. The cable was connected to a similar wheel attached to the west side of the mill. For those of you who need a visual, there is an interesting interpretive sign there at the entrance that was done by a local artist. It's in a scrapbook motif, and one of the things on her sign is a hand-drawn design to show visitors how the tower works. Today, title is held by the ACO, who were critical from the beginning in saving the Sheave Tower. The story goes that in the 1980s, the ACO was able to get a grant to start community heritage funds in several of its branches. Heritage Cambridge was one of those branches, so this meant that matched funds were available if you could fundraise in the community. The purpose of this revolving fund was to purchase a property under threat, to restore it, or to put covenants on the title so that if it was sold to a new owner, they would have to comply with regulations to preserve the building. Now, thanks to these funds and partnerships, the ACO holds title, but it is Heritage Cambridge that oversees its maintenance and holds the insurance on it. I had the chance to speak with Catherine McGarry, who is past president and current director of the Heritage Cambridge branch. Catherine became involved in 1994 when she took over as president of the branch. This was when the owners of the property were planning on moving, and they approached the branch with a proposal. Because they wanted the tower to be preserved, they offered the branch a 5-acre lot that was severed from the original property in which the Sheave Tower was on. I asked Catherine to start by telling me a little bit about the history of the tower.
The tower itself was built in 1876 by Alan Bowman. His father, Samuel Bowman, owned a mill, and it was started as the Carlisle Mill in 1846. And they had already built power for the mill at 25 horsepower, but he really wanted to increase the power, so he built the Sheave Tower about 245 feet away and attached a cable between the Sheave Tower and the mill, and the water ran from the mill pond under the sluiceway, turned the turbine, which again turned the sheave wheel at the top of the tower. That's why it's called the Sheave Tower. And the cable stretched 245 feet across the road to add another 25 horsepower. It's actually one of the smallest water power projects in Canada, and probably one of only two or three left in Canada at the moment. This continued to operate until 1931, when there was a fire in the mill, and they feel that the fire happened because they had tightened the housing where the cable attached on the side of the mill, and it caught fire, and it ended up burning the top three stories of the mill. And interestingly, it was apparently a very, very windy night, and sparks were flying, and they were actually landing on the roof of the owner's home right beside the sheaf tower. And so all hands on deck climbed to the rooftop, and they did bales of water over the roof of the house to preserve the house, and it did not end up catching on fire. After that, they decided to electrify it, so that they put in an electric motor, and that's where the add-on of the sheaf tower happened. That was around 1932 to 1933, and it actually ran until 1952, when it was finally shut down.
Between 1952 until its restoration, the lonely tower just sat there waiting for something to happen to it. It seemed to live a double life, though, since on one hand, people would go there and read, paint, and enjoy the beauty of the seasons, and on the other hand, it was on the receiving end of vandals, abuse, and neglect. For Catherine, breathing new life into the sheaf tower was a long labor of love. I asked her what kind of shape it was in when it came into the branch's ownership.
It was pretty dilapidated. It underwent a restoration in the 60s, and the Mennonite builders came down and restored it at that time, and they replaced some of the rotting beams with barn beams. And unfortunately, the barn beams had different holes and things in it that allowed termites and ants to get involved, so, and moisture, and eventually it started to rot. One summer, three teenage boys decided that they needed to remove the cladding, so they snapped off a lot of the boards that were rotting anyway, and the tower was much more open. So at that time, we realized that it wasn't going to last another year. So we as a board decided that we would go forward and put out a request for proposals.
And in the end, who was the architect that you would work with?
Nicholas Hill was our heritage architect, now the late Nicholas Hill. It was one of his last projects that he completed before his death in 2001. Interestingly, Nick Hill was actually the author of the first heritage conservation district in the province of Ontario. And so he had also done the Blair Heritage Conservation District, so he was a natural fit.
The first course of action was to stabilize the building. Nicholas Hill hired a contractor who lived very close by and therefore could keep his eye on the building as well as the materials that were on site. Thanks to the weather, the team was able to work right until December of that year. They started by redoing the sluiceway underneath the foundation, and once it was replaced, they swiftly moved on to stabilizing the tower and the sill beams. The windows warranted a big discussion, as is the case with many older buildings. Here's what Catherine had to say about it.
It's a beautiful 2.5-story board and batten structure. It has a shingled roof. It's kind of tapered to the top. And the windows were actually created as Gothic windows. And I think it's because the owners next door sat on their side porch of an evening and were able to see the tower from their porch. And I think rather than a utilitarian structure, they wanted something pretty to look at in the evening. So it's a beautiful structure. So in the end, Nick decided on some iron bars that fit into the window, so it prevented the animals from getting in, and that helped to ensure that they weren't going to chew their way through the interior.
And the color that it is today, is that the original color?
It is. Under the board and batten near the top of the tower, where it had much less rot, we were able to determine that it was a beautiful oxblood red. So the heritage architect, Nick Hill, mixed the paints until we found the perfect match. So that's the color it is today. It's what it would have been painted.
Now, most people probably wouldn't have known that the color they see today was the color the tower had once been. Catherine then went on to tell me two more stories about the tower that most people probably wouldn't know as well.
One is that there was an author that lived in the house above the sheaf tower, or just up the road from there. When the mill pond was at its best, it was about 6 to 8 feet deep. So people used to dive off the concrete areas in front of the tower into the water. But apparently this author wrote about going down on a moonlit night, a still moonlit night, getting into the rowboat, and floating around on the mill pond, lying on her back and looking at the stars. And that was a subject of a couple of poems from her, so that was one of my favorite things. The other story that I really wanted to mention, and you can actually see this on the interpretive sign, it was very community-oriented in the early days, especially in Blair, and they all looked out for their own. The original owners of the farmhouse that built the mill and eventually the Sheave Tower had a bake oven, a separate bake oven in their back property. And many of the pioneer women that were just moving into the area didn't have such a thing. So every Thursday, it was community bake day at the Bowman's house. They would bring all their ingredients and they would have the women come in and do a community bake afternoon, and they were able to bake their own bread and things for the coming week in the community oven. And we only discovered that while we were doing the Sheave Tower project. So that is also explained in the interpretive sign.
Through the process of restoring it, did you meet any people along the way who had their own stories about the tower or memories from their childhood about the tower?
We did. There was one woman that had actually lived in the house, in the owner's house, that was a child when the mill burned. And she was part of the team that was throwing buckets of water over her rooftop to save the house from being burned. And when we reopened the tower on Blair Day in year 2000, she came out and was able to recount the story to the people that were there for the opening. So,
and how was the opening day? Did you have a good turnout?
Opening day we did on Blair Day, and it was fantastic. The weather cooperated. It was Blair's 200th anniversary. The village of Blair is one of the oldest inland settlements. And so this was celebrating 200 years in Blair. So at the actual opening ceremonies, we had a ceremonial covered wagon come up with some of the family members from the original settlers in Blair, the Pennsylvania Dutch. So they ceremoniously brought the wagon up and they made a parade out. We had all the dignitaries and politicians, but we had several hundred people at the opening ceremonies, and then we've conducted tours ever since.
The Sheave Tower is a regional landmark, and even though many may not have seen the tower in person, they might just recognize it since it's one of the most painted and photographed structures in Waterloo region. But it seems to have a farther reach than that.
Nick Hill and his wife were down taking a vacation. They were sitting in a fish and chip shop overlooking the ocean in New Brunswick somewhere. And Nick suddenly said he felt like home. He looked up at the wall and there was a photograph of the Sheave Tower all the way in New Brunswick.
Well, that brings us to the end of our podcast. I would like to thank Catherine McGarry for inviting me to her home and telling me all about her work with the Sheave Tower. I would also like to thank the Cambridge Archives. If you ever find yourself in Cambridge, Ontario, be sure to check out the wonderfully restored Sheave Tower. And may I suggest you bring with you your fishing rod or paint set, camera, or just a good old-fashioned book and stay a while. If you want to learn more about the Architectural Conservancy of Ontario and its involvement with the preservation and conservation of buildings all over Ontario, the ACO is celebrating its 80th anniversary by putting together a book. This book will feature 80 buildings the organization has had a hand in saving over the last 80 years. Now, the Building Stories episode you heard today is just one that will be included, but there are many more stories to discover. You can get the book starting in November 2013 by ordering it online at their website. The Building Stories podcast series could not have been made possible without our sponsors. So a big thank you to the Architectural Conservancy of Ontario, the Heritage Resource Centre at the University of Waterloo, the Centre for Community Mapping, the Computer Systems Group at the University of Waterloo, and the Government of Ontario. If you have any comments, we would love to hear from you. You can email the Building Stories team at info@buildingstories.co or send them a tweet at Building Stories, which is BLDG_stories. And of course, you can find them on Facebook under the Building Stories Facebook page. These podcasts have been written, produced, and hosted by myself, Amy Barnes, and I'd like to take this last moment to thank you all for listening.